Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Center Point versus TUC.
I am presenting argument on behalf of both petitioners, Center Point and American Electric Power. There's no dispute, no serious dispute in this case, that interest or carrying costs are required when stranded costs are recovered over time. The Court of Appeals agreed with that and correctly held that interest or carrying costs is an element of stranded costs. But the court fell into error when it said that those stranded costs are not created until the end of the true-up proceeding later in 2004. We believe that's wrong. And the core issue in this case is when stranded costs come into existence.
I'm not sure I understand the statutory scheme totally. What statutory mechanism, if any, was there in place to allow utility with a generating facility that was above market price? In other words, the book value was higher than market value. And they've got operating costs, debt service, and all of this between 2002 and 2004. Was there any mechanism under the statutory scheme to recover those debt service operating costs?
If I understand your question, Justice Owen, the mechanism contemplated by the statute to recover the carrying costs, the interest on the generation investments is interest. If carrying costs are not allowed from the date stranded costs are created, 1102, and interest does not begin to accrue until 2004 or later, then under what we call the regulatory compact, the utilities would have lost the opportunity to recover a return on those generation investments for that extended period.
What about the true-up for the capacity auction? Would that compensate you at all for these, the debt service and all of that?
No, Your Honor. The capacity auction idea or argument that it compensates is a, with all respect, a myth. In the first place, the Commission never found any such thing. It's an ad hoc appellate argument. The Court of Appeals instead specifically found that the capacity auction is an independent, separate calculation that has nothing to do with stranded costs.
But doesn't it sort of approximate a stream of income?
No. Its purpose is to set a stabilizing baseline for the price of power during 02 and 03. There was lots of concerns at the legislature as to what might happen when this competitive market opened 1102. Are you going to have utilities coming in and charging very high prices for power, taking advantage that the competition wouldn't really exist? Or on the other hand, are you going to have competitors coming in that drive the price of power down so low that you would have an unstabilized market? So the legislature, in its wisdom, said we want the commission to project a power price. And we're going to true up then to that projection, up or down, depending on which way it goes.
Is the wholesale power price?
Yes, a wholesale power price. And
if the wholesale power price is lower, explain what happens.
Well,
at the auction.
If the wholesale power price is lower than the commission projected, consumers, customers would get the benefit of the true-up. If it's higher, then in that event, it would work the other way. I'm sorry, I misstated it. If the capacity auction prices are higher than projected, That is, if the utilities are able to recover more during this period, then they're going to have to refund or reduce back to the projected level. And the flip side of that is if they're lower than projected, the utility would be entitled to an upward.
And is that, that refund is with interest from December 31, 2001?
There is no provision for interest in the capacity auction. We argued Chief Justice Phillips for interest below, and it was denied on the theory that the capacity auction is an independent factor that has nothing to do with stranded costs. Interest on stranded cost is based on the statutory requirement that we be able to recover all verifiable stranded costs. And as I say, the Court of Appeals has indicated that, or held, that when stranded costs are recovered over time, you have to have interest in order to have full recovery.
I'm trying to help me understand. There's an income stream that the utility, that the generation company gets for this two-year period. And it's, as I'm not sure I understand it, so help me here. It's based on the power they sell, that they actually sell, and it's at an e-com price, which is not market-based. So they're guaranteed that e-com price on the power they sell for those 2 years.
Well, the guarantee works both ways, as I've explained. There's a true up to a projected price. And to use some numbers, in CenterPoint's case, that was $43.
Well, they're going to get, but when all is said and done in the true-up, what the utility or the generation company gets to keep is the e-com price,
That's correct.
And was that projected price an approximation of what the generation company's operating cost, return, all of that would be or not?
Has nothing to do with operating costs. All it has to do is with a stabilizing market price for the first 2 years of competition when no one knew what the effect of going into competition would be.
As a surrogate for the market price, that's how the generation company would have otherwise have recouped its carrying costs, operating costs, or not. I mean,
that would be the true-up level. But I think the killer to this issue is that the stranded cost amount under the statute can be positive, negative, or zero, and that has no impact whatsoever on these capacity auction power cost projections. It has nothing to do with stranded cost recovery. What we do have here is an argument that I think is helpful, that if you say that stranded costs don't exist until they're quantified in 2004, that would be an argument that prejudgment interest in a civil case is not appropriate because no damages exist until a judgment that determines the amount of the recovery.
Let me ask you about the capacity auction true-up to follow up on Justice Allen's questions. Are we bound by law of the case from equating those two? In other words, if the appellate court has held that you can't net them up to make any determination of stranded cost, and that issue's not been appealed to us, are we bound as law of the case to that proposition?
Well, I would state it differently, that all parties accepted the decision of the Court of Appeals.
In other words, if we accept that decision, could we then accept your opposing counsel's argument that we can take that into account in determining stranded costs?
And whether you can or should, my argument is that even if you consider it, it makes no difference. It's an entirely independent consideration. It's not a mistake that the Court of Appeals made.
No, I understand that. I didn't mean to imply that. I'm just saying that my understanding of the premise of the Court of Appeals decision in that regard was that it is entirely different. And do we then, as a matter of law of the case, accept that premise and not even get into it?
I believe you should. But in saying that, I'm not concerned about your examining it, because I think under the statute you've necessarily come to the same conclusion. This is an opportunistic argument presented by the other side now that it appears that the true-up would run in the utility's favor.
In the 2004 true-up?
Yes.
Not the capacity auction.
Right.
In the 2004 true-up, when market value of a utility's assets are determined, is that, I take it that determination is made as of the day it's made. In other words, we're determined, the 2004 true-up determines market value as of whatever date in 2004 or 5, not as of 2002. Is that true?
Not entirely, Your Honor. I think the market value transactions can occur over a very extended period of time. Anytime after 1999, the utility can sell, have a stock transaction, whatever. So you have these market values that are can be determined in a series of transactions. And the purpose of the 2004 true-up is to take those market values, compare them to 1231-01 book value, and decide whether you have stranded costs.
But usually, when you think about market value, you think about it in a point in time, because things are changing, and they're certainly changing in this industry.
Yes.
And everybody agrees that natural gas prices, weather, and other factors can influence market value. So when that market value is determined to compare it to the December 31, 2001 book value, what date is being used to determine the market value?
The date that the transaction of the transaction that the utility entered into.
And whether it's the sale of assets in August 2004.
Which could have been any time from 99 to 2004.
That's what the legislature decided, that nobody knows what these market values are going to be. So the utilities would be given an opportunity to engage in these market transactions. And the ones that are now operative are close to the 2004 true-up. To sell, exchange, have stock offerings, that would determine this market value. And as the legislative history indicates, that would provide a period of 2 years, really more because it continued, it began earlier than that, during which utilities would have an opportunity to test the market.
So respond, here is a statement in the Texas Industrial Energy Consumers Brief. Respond to it if you would. The market value of a utility's assets established in the 2004 true-up proceeding is in no way indicative, reflective, or tied to the market value those same assets had in 2002. What's your response to that?
The market value when?
In the true-up is in no way reflective, indicative, or tied to market value in 2002.
I think that to say in no way it is incorrect. I think what the legislature decided, we don't want everybody to go out and sell everything 1102. We want to have a period of time for these transactions. Then you take the transaction, as long as it meets the statutory requirement, compare it to 1231-01 book value. The point is that the legislature...
How long can this go on?
Well, it can't go on... passed the true-up in 2004.
And the true-up is at a definite date, is that right?
No. The true-up has to be filed at some time after January 10th of this year.
Until when?
That's all the statute says. There have been filings. The statute goes on to say that the commission is supposed to complete the hearing within 150 days, but there are good cause exceptions, so forth. So the true-up final order will not be until late 2004, maybe even later than that.
But if AEP's sale doesn't happen in August, if it gets delayed till November, then the true-up might occur in 05?
The information necessary for the true-up would have to be available when AEP files for the true-up. And I don't think there's any game playing here about people waiting forever to file.
Well, have CenterPoint and AEP filed, either or both of them filed yet?
I think CenterPoint, if I understand it, CenterPoint has filed.
January 12th.
But is in the process of filing, but has not yet filed.
I'm groping to understand. If When CenterPoint files, it's not going to be as of the value as of the date of that filing. It's some continuum over a five-year period.
CenterPoint uses a partial stock offering as allowed by the statute. That stock offering has been going on for some time. It has to exist for a year. The commission then has the opportunity to go back and pick a 30-day period of stock prices. Those are then used.
Within the last 4 months?
Yes.
So CenterPoint's going to be comparing stock valuation in spring of 04 to book value in January of 02.
That's correct.
Let me ask you this. On the trying to understand on the 02 recovery, you had everybody has several options. You can switch depreciations. When was the earliest? Could you switch all your depreciation as of January 02?
Well, as January 02, depreciation is immaterial. You're now in a competitive environment. You don't recover depreciation as an expense anymore.
But there was the shift. You could reduce stranded costs by shifting depreciation from transmission distribution to the generation.
These mitigation efforts, you have to continue to use the tools that the statute provided earlier than 1102.
So once you're
in a competitive environment, you have to use good business judgment to try to reduce stranded
costs. So when could you switch depreciation from to the generation assets?
But that would not have any effect on book value. Book value is 1-1.
Answer my question first.
I'm trying to understand it, Joe.
When could you switch depreciation from the transmission to the generation? Before 02?
Before 02, you were directed to do so by the legislature, but the commission, as you'll recall, said we're not going to have the stranded costs, so you need to reverse it.
Leave aside the EMC for a second.
Yes.
So you could have done that before 02?
We could have and did.
Right. And same thing with securitization that could have taken place before 02?
That's correct.
And under both of those, the stranded costs book value would be reduced, stranded costs reduced. The ratepayers in the case of depreciation shift or the investors in the case of securitization would be paying back, I guess, principal plus interest in both cases, right?
Yes, the utility in that event would have the money. But in that event, book value would be reduced, so stranded costs would be reduced. There'd be no recovery of that amount.
So if they hadn't undone in 02 the depreciation transfer, I couldn't undo securitization, but if they hadn't undone the depreciation transfer, we wouldn't be here because carrying costs would have been eliminated and they'd have been shifted to the ratepayers.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't want to get into the EMCs unnecessarily, but if it had not been for the reversal of the EMCs and the reversal of depreciation that the commission ordered, stranded costs would now be a lot lower.
Right.
That's my point.
This would have been a lot smaller problem.
Yes. And in that respect, let me simply say that we are presenting the EMC issue in the alternative. Because if we receive, as we believe we're entitled to receive, stranded costs, interest on stranded costs back to 1102, that takes care of the EMC problem.
CenterPoint and AEP seem to be in different positions on the EMC. Is that correct? Because CenterPoint is no longer appealing whether that was proper or not, but AEP is.
That's correct. Contested case proceeding, AEP still has that issue preserved. After this court's New Year's Eve opinion on the EMCs, CenterPoint went to district court and was assured that this matter would be taken care of at the true-up. And the district judge said any prohibition against recovering interest on the EMCs was premature. Now, we're faced with a rule, however, that flatly says no interest on EMCs and no interest on anything until 1102, until the true-up, I'm sorry, in 04, when we say, with good reason, that stranded costs were created 1102.
But these are, there could be different impacts on you and AEP depending on what happens in the EMC.
In the long term, in the other case, but there's no difference between the two companies in this challenge.
But, all my getting is, if we were to say that you're entitled to interest on the EMCs, and AEP pursued all the way through the courts, it's right to say the EMCs were improper. That could all be washed out in AEP's case, ultimately.
And it would apply in CenterPoint's case as well, because the district judge in CenterPoint said it was premature to decide the interest issue now.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Mr. Steve Barron and Mr. Jonathan Day will present argument from respondents. Mr. Barron will open with the first 12 minutes.
Good morning, and may it please the court. What I would like to do in the short time that I have is to frame the issue for the court, then address the capacity auction questions that were asked by the court, then address the market, how, at what point in time does the market value these assets, and finally clarify the question of the scheduling for the true-up that the court asked. To frame the issue, everyone agrees that the legislature nowhere actually instructed the commission to award interest back to 2002 if stranded costs are found to exist in 2004.
Or not to.
Either or way. Not to exist. And in fact...
Or after four.
Well, after is when the legislature cut it off, but that's correct. In fact, in the rulemaking proceeding, CenterPoint urged that the commission's rule should provide for interest prospectively beginning June 2004. And in its rulemaking comments, it also recognized that the capacity auction true-up was the proper mechanism to address the 02-03 period. The question now, though...
There's so much in the record. Is a copy of those comments appended anywhere to the briefs? Or is it part of the record?
I'll send you. It's part of the record. It's item 7 at record item 7 at pages 28 to 29, record item 16 at pages 4, and then record item 45 at pages 97 to 98. But the argument here, nevertheless, is that the legislature implicitly intended to award interest as of 02. And it's the argument is that on that day, the first day of competition, stranded costs were created, and in consequence, the utilities lost all ability to earn a reasonable return over that ensuing 02-03 period. The commission disagrees that stranded costs were created on that date.
What about the argument that there's a 2-year gap in there where they've got debt service and all of that?
I think that's ultimately the crux of it, because no matter how you come away with deciding when stranded costs were created, it's clear that the legislature said put mechanisms in the statute, chief in point, but not solely, the capacity auction true up, to ensure that the utilities have what they were promised under the regulatory regime, a reasonable opportunity to earn a return on the investment.
Explain to me how the capacity auction true-up covers their debt service and operating costs during that 2-year period.
The capacity auction true-up is addressed for the court's reference in subsection I of the rule. And basically what it is truly an unprecedented wholesale revenue guarantee to the utilities that they will recover fully what the commission estimated to be not only fuel costs, but also the fixed costs of operating the plants over that 2-year period.
But the unrelated to stranded costs, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that it's entirely compatible with the commission's position to view stranded costs on one side as addressing, if there are stranded costs in 04, you recover them and get them, if you don't get them all at once on a going forward basis. And that separately, the legislature provided, as the Court of Appeals has ruled, that the capacity auction revenue guarantee provides, among other things, provides the kind of opportunity for these utilities who still have the assets and can sell power in the market to get revenues during the 02-03 period.
But is it true, as the petitioner says, that whether the stranded costs were positive, negative, or zero, that would have no effect on the capacity auction?
That's absolutely correct. And in fact, what that means
is... So how are they related?
Well, the question for the court is, The sole justification for saying we want interest back to for the 02-03 period is that not that we won't recover the full amount that the commission finds, but that we were deprived of the use, the opportunity to earn a return during that interim period. And the commission's view, the commission believes it was entitled to look at the statute and say, among other things, the provisions, among other things, that the utilities, so these utilities still have these assets, they're selling in the market, they have expanded, the legislature recognized that there are expanded market opportunities to earn a return during that period. It wasn't like they were left to the dogs on that date. Plus, we, the legislature, are going to guarantee
How is there expanded right for the generating entity to have expanded opportunities? Because they, even if they did better than the market or whatever, they're brought back down to the econ model. I mean, there was no upside or downside.
First, brought back down, I think, is a misconception. The utilities, the numbers are in on this. It hasn't been litigated before the commission, but they sold power in the market, and CenterPoint anticipates that it will get $1.2 billion.
All I'm saying is they got Econ. Where was the opportunity to get more or less than Econ?
Having these assets participating in the market. Two sections that I think are worthy of the court's consideration to show that the legislature understood that there were opportunities in the market
for the generator.
Yes, for the generator.
What are those? Tell me what they are.
One is in section 252D, the legislature said that before the commission determines stranded costs in 04, utilities are in the market and have a duty to do what they can to use commercially reasonable means to reduce their potential stranded costs, including things like renegotiating contracts. In the price to beat adjustment, which is 202L, that allows the retail affiliate to request a fuel adjustment over twice a year over the 02-03 period in a way, as we explained in our brief, that acts as a price umbrella basically to raise the retail price of power, which in turn can provide increased selling opportunities for the utilities. But I want to come back to this capacity auction true-up because it really is so unique and important and was specifically geared to the 02-03 period. As I said, the numbers are in. If those numbers are indeed what the utility will get, it will reflect well above what the regulated return would have been for these utilities. $1.3 billion is what CenterPoint believes it's owed, and $450 million is what AEP believes that it's owed.
But as I understand the basis of the petitioner's position, it's that the legislature meant for them to have that anyway, and that they're entitled to the interest. We're going to get an apple no matter what. What we want is an orange.
I think the better way to look at the statute is that the legislature looked at these two separate periods. It said, we've got this transitional two-year period. Here's what we're going to do about that. We understand that market value fluctuates, and we can't know whether stranded costs exist or not while you're in the market selling. And for 04, we'll decide if stranded costs exist or not. And if you have them, you get them. And you don't get them all at once. If the number's real large, you get it over time, and you'll get interest appropriately.
Well, but let's say I have a $1 billion generating plant here, and I've got lots of debt service.
Yes.
And this capacity auction is not going to make me whole. And the statute says I get it anyway, but it's not going to make me whole because the market value of this generating plant is only $200 million. So I've got $800 million at stranded cost, which I've been carrying the debt service for 2 years, and the operating costs, which is the operating costs are above market, da, 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 da. How do I ever get those back?
Now, the $800 million you get.
I've been paying debt service for 2 years on the $1 billion.
Yes, and you get if indeed that's what the numbers turn out to be, the legislature looked at it and said, you get...
But I get that anyway.
Well, you get that anyway. The legislature wasn't intending to give more than one could reasonably expect under the statute.
They wanted me to get my stranded costs down, and I might have done it had the commission not stepped in. That's a whole other issue, but I didn't get it down. Now, under the statutory scheme, I get what I was supposed to get under the capacity auction, yet I have no opportunity to recoup my debt service and these other costs.
But you've been in the market. The question of whether you have stranded costs and in 04 is a question of what the market looks what the revenues will be on a going forward basis. It doesn't address the question of whether you had a reasonable opportunity during this transitional period to earn a return, which is all this is all this debate is about.
What is the justification for the commission to say we recognize that going forward you have to get these carrying costs, but saying for this 2-year period we're saying you don't get them?
Two reasons. One is, once you have a debt that's firm, if the ratepayers any kind of debt, once that you either pay up now or you pay over time, and you should appropriately be awarded interest. And the second reason that the commission said this way but not backwards is that the legislature put in these mechanisms to address this transitional period. These utilities have not lost the time value of money. They have been in the market selling power and now claiming large amounts of money that more than surpass what a regulated return would have been for this period.
Okay, what if we get into all this and disagree, and we find there are two different things? Do you lose?
No.
Why not?
If you conclude, there are two steps to the issue. One is whether the legislature put in mechanisms to give a reasonable opportunity to.
And let's say.
Let's put that to one side. The threshold question that's necessary to the argument is that stranded costs were indeed created on that first day.
No, or couldn't it be that they were created just some time before? Because by saying it's only from the true-up proceeding forward, that's an arbitrary determination.
Well,
so if there's any indication that stranded costs could be recoverable from a certain point in time, let's say the assets are sold before 04, and you know that number beforehand, 6 months beforehand, the rule that just arbitrarily says you don't collect it till after the true-up proceeding would seem to be, just by definition, arbitrary.
Well, what the rule does is it actually establishes a specific schedule for the utilities to do a true-up following when they have completed their market transactions. It will be in March for when the stock transaction period finishes for CenterPoint. It will be in September because of the of that.
Okay, so then what about the 150 days? The order comes out on the 150th day.
The legislature spoke to that issue. The legislature said, we recognize that there is a time factor in here, and in 262J, the legislature said, Commission, you have 150 days to get the job done, to grant the thing. And on the other hand, it gave the Commission express discretion to do appropriate scheduling. What the legislature did not do, in addition to saying, here's your 150-day limit, do it quickly, it didn't say, and you should get interest for that period, as it did in Chapter 36, 36.1.
Okay, presuming that's the case, isn't that arbitrary? I mean, if you're determining it as of the date of filing, even 150 days, why is that not time value carrying cost of money?
That's a traditional regulatory lag kind of concept, that the risk is traditionally borne by utility when rates are awarded on a prospective basis, unless the legislature has stepped in specifically, as it did in Chapter 36, and didn't do in Chapter 39, to say, well, you can set temporary rates to be applicable during the time it takes to do the proceeding. And if the legislature didn't do that, there's no statutory right to get it. That's a reasonable way to
Yes, just two quick questions. When is market value determined as of? You said you were in
Yes, Your Honor.
In the Mr. Day's time.
Yes. By way of example, last week the power the Mark's publicly traded stock of CenterPoint's power generation company jumped 10% in a single day. It will go up. It will go down. It's been going up. It's been going down. The legislature said, for purposes of when market value is determined, if you're going to do the publicly traded stock route, that it has to be traded in the market when the utility chooses the time to go to the market for at least 1 year period, and then the commission has authority to set the schedule for when the application will be filed by the utility, and the commission has authority to look back over the 120-day period, the last 120-day period, and pick an appropriate 30-day period for purposes of valuation. So for CenterPoint, the market valuation will occur sometime by looking at a market segment, sometime over the February-March period. For AEP, they're selling assets.
So it'll be in August when,
August, when
the sale?
August when they do that. And so we just don't know what it is.
But,
and that's
but either of those could have been in 2003 or 2002.
Could have been, but weren't. And
right.
I think what's important is when the utility has the statutory right to choose, they have chosen by nature, but inherently you decide whether or not you have stranded costs by comparing the appropriate time as specified in the legislature and as the utilities choose for when market value is established, and we know that's 04, and you compare that to book value, not just, I want to clarify the point you made, not just 99 fixed and set, but under 252, the utilities have had a commercially, a duty to reduce their book value using commercially reasonable means straight through to the true-up, which is why our view is that stranded costs are created when you, those two variables stop and you know that the culmination of events has stopped and you make that determination in 04, not in 02.
Now, when the second question, when the utilities were ordered to give EMCs.
Yes.
And pay interest going forward.
Yes.
When it, if it is determined
yes.
that that was improvident and
yes.
those EMCs should not have been ordered and they
yes.
come back,
yes.
does the interest that was paid become a part of the corpus that comes back to the utility or not?
Yes. And it all, not only doesn't get, not only because it won't get all paid at once, that's just how these things are.
Right.
The utilities will get prospective interest, not even just at the 7.5%, but at the, in a 9 to 12% range.
But just to be very clear, they were giving the EMCs and paying 7.5% interest. And so that total over time, and so that total number comes up to be the EMC plus the interest. And so when it the EMC, when they recover that, do they get back the EMC plus the interest?
That is my understanding. And if I find out that someone tells me I'm wrong, you will know later today.
But they're out that interest, which they could have been earning interest. So that, in a sense, becomes part of the corpus.
And you're right. If the commission was wrong to have ordered that, the excess mitigation in the first place, then they ought not just to get the corpus and the 7.5%, but they ought to get that lost time value of money. But that's not an issue in this case. That's an issue in the commission didn't have authority to do, it was invalid to do the excess mitigation order in the first place.
And has nothing to do with the rule.
That's what we, that's our position, Your Honor.
Let me understand what we're talking about when we're tossing the term carrying costs. We're not, are we or are we not? Are we looking at fixed interest rate or are we looking at an individual company's actual carrying costs?
I think we're looking at weighted cost of capital, which will vary by utility.
So it's not just a set rate that the commission picks. They look at the actual companies, what their actual expenses would have been during the
Of course, they're not going to do a new proceeding. They're going to look back to what happened under the regulatory regime last go-round. Mm-hmm. And I think it's in the, for each of these, it's in the range of 9 to 12. The weighted cost of capital.
It's specific. It's not just
it's utility. Yes, it's utility specific.
Right.
In both cases, it's far. It's in excess of the 7.5%.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give Mr. Day 8 minutes.
May it please the court, I'm Jonathan Day. I represent the Texas Industrial Energy Consumers, sometimes known as TIEC. For purposes of this case, TIEC is about 30 large consumers of electricity, including refiners, ExxonMobil, Shell, and others, petrochemical manufacturers, Oxy, and others, as well as major hospitals in the Texas Medical Center. These are users of large amounts of electricity. We're deeply concerned about the implications of this case on our rates. And in a sense, I reread all of the intervener's briefs recently, and I don't think there's any significant disagreement among the intervener ratepayer groups. And so our comments really represent, I think, a common viewpoint among all ratepayers. We have the city of Houston, residential customers, commercial customers, the state of Texas, and a number of others who have expressed a strong interest in this case. Let me begin with an agreement with Mr. Herron, and that is there is no dispute in this case that as of the determination by the commission in a final order of what stranded costs are, a utility is entitled to that amount plus its carrying costs going forward. Ratepayers recognize that that's the regime that the legislature established. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the effort by the utilities to ask this court to go back and add to that amount an additional amount, which is characterized
as... Well, not really. I mean, my understanding of what we're supposed to do here is just determine whether this rule is arbitrary or not. And if we do that, the commission can then hear evidence and decide in a particular case whether interest or carrying costs went back before that. I mean, it sounds like we're being asked to do a lot of advisory sort of things when really all we need to do is determine whether this only true-up forward calculation is just arbitrary.
Well, Your Honor, and in that respect, I want to respond to that directly because that reflects our client's viewpoint. The rule is not arbitrary insofar as it establishes that carrying costs are applicable from the date of the true-up forward. No one contests that that's a reasonable provision in the rule. What the utilities want is to have this court inject into the rule a further provision, a requirement, without any of the facts in this case. We've had discussions about the capacity auction true-up, how much have the utilities recovered during this two-year period. What they're saying is they want the court to rule that they're entitled as a matter of law to an additional amount when the facts about what the utilities have actually realized during this time period are not before the court.
But we're testing the rule. We can make assumptions, high, low, middle, to test the rule. Would it be arbitrary and reasonable under these circumstances or these circumstances, regardless of whether they ever occur? We're just testing the rule.
Well, in that respect, Your Honor, I do think that when you test the rule, and I want to try to respond, I know how complicated the capacity auction true-up, at least it is for me. We know, and it's recited in our brief, that these utilities have already reported to the Securities and Exchange Commission that they're entitled to non-cash earnings, in the case of CenterPoint, $1.35 billion attributable to the capacity auction true-up. That is based upon a market assumed price pursuant to the ECOM model that includes within it, Your Honor, the investment in generating facilities, the operating costs, and all of the other elements. The utilities claim that the ECOM model has made a market prediction that is much too high. Keep in mind that the capacity auction true-up delivers to the utilities the difference between that price, which they claim is much too high, and what they've actually received. This commission has not ruled that these utilities will not earn a reasonable return in 2002 and 2003. This commission has not heard the evidence. It has not heard anything about whether or not the capacity auction true-up has actually operated in a reasonable fashion, what the earnings have been in terms of their operations of their generating plants. None of that has been determined by the commission. The commission has not yet ruled.
But that's the troublesome thing. They have not heard all of that and haven't ruled, but they have ruled no interest except going forward.
What they ruled is that interest will go forward, but what they haven't been called upon yet to do is to say, taking into account the capacity auction true-up and all other elements, potential interest on the ECOM, the returned amounts, what are the utilities entitled to?
What if they think, after they hear all that and look at those numbers, that they really should have had interest for the two-year period?
They have enormous flexibility at the commission, Your Honor. They have to set just and reasonable rates. And our position is that what...
They don't set those for the generation.
They do in the sense that they are entitled to make a determination of stranded costs. And they have a determination to be made about what is a reasonable resolution based upon the capacity auction true-up and the earnings of these companies. What we're concerned about is that if the court should hold, yes, interest is required, we're going to engraft that into the statute.
No, but we wouldn't...
I don't understand that we need to do that in order to rule their way. If we just were to say that this does appear to be a fairly arbitrary date, the commission, once they hear all the evidence, can determine when the interest shall run. I mean, I don't understand that we have to totally buy hook, line, and sinker the accrual argument in order to say the rule appears to be arbitrary.
Well, Your Honor, it is. First of all, I want to say unhappily that it is a given in the context of deregulation that there has to be an arbitrary date when stranded costs are determined. And it is just in the nature of the process that the curtain has to fall for each of these utilities at a point in time.
And is that the date they file? The date the commission chooses from within their filing?
Well, we've had a discussion about the various methodologies. Certainly a key ingredient is the date of their application. For this utility, based on the formula that is center point, the 30-day moving average of the stock, the curtain will fall on that date, and then the commission will have some discretion about selecting that 30-day evaluation period. So we have to have a date. And then the question is, well, has the commission made a reasonable determination of stranded costs based on the facts and circumstances, based on the methodology selected, and all of those other considerations? The separate issue is, well, what has been the results during this 2002-2003 time period? And what we are very, very strongly concerned about is that the utilities, and I agree with you, I think the court has the discretion not to say, well, which is what they'd like for you to do, is say we're entitled to not interest. That's a misnomer. It's a guaranteed rate of return. It's their average cost of capital differential. It's characterized as interest, but that's what they want. They want a guaranteed rate of return from January 1, 2002 through the end of 2000 until a final order in this case. That's not what they indicated to the commission. And one thing I want to emphasize that Mr. Barron said, neither of these utilities told this commission at the time this rule was adopted that they thought they were entitled to a guaranteed rate of return back to January 1 of 2002. Look through the record. Look at the comments of these utilities. Neither one of them said boo about this. To the contrary, CenterPoint said, we think interest should accrue from approximately June 1 of 2004 until whatever date there's a final order in the case.
Was the rule adopted before the EMCs were ordered or after?
I believe, and I'm not clear about this, but I believe that the rule was adopted. I guess the honest answer, I don't know. I'm afraid to give you the answer that I think. I'll have to provide that to you.
This all seems so intertwined to me. I'm having trouble sorting it out because it seems like the generating company is kind of caught in a trap that was not of its own making, that it wanted to reduce its stranded costs, did the depreciation, all of that to get stranded costs down. And then the commission came along and reversed all of that so that its stranded costs are now high. It would have had this fixed stream of income come what may. And now the commission, through the EMCs, has kept stranded costs way up here. They've had to do the debt service on that and all of that, and they have no way to recoup it, where they would have mitigated a lot of this had the commission not interfered. Now the commission is saying, we got you both ways.
Your Honor, these utilities are entitled to their stranded costs, and they're going to get them. What they're asking here is for this court.
Haven't they had higher carrying costs in the interim because of the commission's actions?
No. I mean,
in other words, they would have gotten the stranded costs returned earlier, but for the EMCs.
Right. Absolutely. And it's not clear that there are going to be any stranded costs. I mean, the court should not assume.
Well, again, we're looking at the rule and how it could operate and test whether it's arbitrary or not. And let's assume the state of facts, to go into Judge Brister's question.
It is accurate. If stranded costs are determined to exist, then if they had if they had not refunded in the form of excess mitigation credits, they've lost the use of that money during the time period. The commission, pursuant to the district court ruling, the commission has the discretion to determine, at least in our view, that interest is due on that during that time period. They give that money back to them if that's what they want to do. What they want this court to do is to make a ruling without any of the facts. They want rigid rulings that we get interest from January 1, 2002, and we get interest on the EMCs without knowing any of the facts relative to what stranded costs might be.
Are you saying that the commission has the discretion to award interest before the true-up proceeding judgment on the EMCs?
Not before the true-up. I mean, the true-up is, this is all going to come down at the time of the true-up.
But at the true-up, could they award interest before the true-up?
I think they have that discretion.
But now their argument is going to be the rule does not allow that.
No, the rule says you get interest on stranded costs from the date of the order forward. It doesn't say, and you get no other interest, you don't ever get any other interest. It doesn't say, it says what you're entitled to, and to which we have agreed.
All right, tell me real quickly, how do you square the CA's opinion on inability to net up against stranded costs, the capacity auction true-ups, because they're a different thing?
That's an important question. Keep in mind that the Court of Appeals ruled that the interest was not due from January 1, 2002. The Court of Appeals never addressed the implications of its opinion that the capacity auction true-up is not a stranded cost on the question of the entitlement of the utilities to a reasonable return during this time period. They never reached that question. Yes, they did say the capacity auction true-up is not a stranded cost. They said there is a close nexus. Our view is, and it's stated in our brief, that it's impossible to separate all this. We're moving from a regulatory regime to an unregulated regime. And yes, there is this interim period that the Court of Appeals identified. And yes, the court said you can't net between these various items. But the court never reached are stated in any way what the implications were vis-a-vis the return or the protection of these companies during this interim period. We are not opposed to these companies earning a reasonable return. What we are very afraid of, and the reason we are here, is that they want to stack interest and capacity auction true-up, and what they're going to get is a return vastly in excess of what they would have received in a regulated regime, including all of their costs, the return, and so forth. And what they want this court to do is to put the utility commission in a straitjacket so they have to award more during this time period than they would have been entitled to in a regulated
regime. So you'd be fine if we said we're not going to answer the question of whether they're entitled to it back to the beginning of competition. If we just said the rule does appear to be arbitrary and the commission can award interest as it sees fit in the hearings, your concern is that we make the affirmative statement that it's recoverable back to competition.
That is our principal concern, because we believe that if you should make a direction to the commission that they must award interest, what will happen is ratepayers will be severely damaged because these companies will get more than their
entitlement. Not that they must award interest, but just that this statute, the commission can do what it deems appropriate in its discretion as to interest, but that this statute is arbitrary and it just throws it to the commission to determine.
Well, I submit to you, the rule is not arbitrary. And what the utilities want you to do is to say the rule is, it should have additional elements in it, and they want you to go into it without the facts before you.
I want to make sure I understand. What happens if the true-ups occur for the stranded costs before if there's a final decision in the courts about the propriety of the EMCs? Can you go back and undo the true-up if the courts were ultimately say the EMCs were incorrect? How do you undo all of that?
Well, money is fungible, and with taking into account the time value of money, I'm certain that between the commission and the courts, if it is determined that excess mitigation credits should not have been awarded, there is a mechanism whereby interest can be provided to make the utilities whole. They've lost.
Do you go back and revalue? Do you go back and restore the credits and then redo the true up? I mean, what do you do?
You just assume that, which is what the utilities have asked this court to direct. They want you to rule here in an opinion that they were entitled to this interest back to January 1, from the date of the excess mitigation credits. I mean, they can be made whole for the time value of money. There's no doubt in my mind.
I'm just asking how this works in your view. I know they're separate proceedings, but I'm just trying to figure out how this all works in the grand scheme of things. Do you go back and redo the true-up if it's determined that the excess mitigation that the utilities were doing was proper and the commission had no statutory authority to stop it? How do you go back and put the genie back in the bottle and figure out true-up cost? I mean, do you do that? I mean, how does that work?
Excess mitigation credits are attributable to excess earnings. Everybody agreed to that. These utilities were allowed to collect excess earnings, earnings over and above a reasonable rate of return. And they put them to the side, and they said, we're going to credit that against potential stranded costs. At a later time, the commission came in and said, well, it doesn't look like there's going to be any stranded costs, so we're going to start refunding. They haven't refunded all those excess earnings. I believe it's laid out over a regime of 5 years, perhaps seven. And they have refunded for a certain period of time in order to make them whole if it is subsequently determined that there are stranded costs and that they were entitled to offset. You can give them the value of the money back to the date that the credits were issued.
What about the depreciation switch? What do you do about that?
Well, I don't believe at this point that the depreciation switch can be. I'm less clear about that. I want to be candid with you. I don't think that can be. I don't believe all of the depreciation shift can be remedied at this point because it affects the T&D utilities rates because the rates that they have been entitled to collect. So that is a much more difficult matter. But keep in mind that under a securitization regime, Your Honor, once stranded costs are determined, they are in a position to realize in cash the full amount of the stranded costs as a single payment. The whole regime is based on that. So I don't think the court needs to be concerned that they are going to be disadvantaged in this circumstance.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me begin by straightening out the capacity auction. The projected price that the commission came up with is based on the assumption that the market would be driven by a most efficient combined cycle gas plant. And it said, it looked at, that's what will drive a competitive market. The marginal unit that will drive the market and produce the most efficient price. That gas plant price, almost by definition, is not sufficient to recover the unrecovered costs in a nuclear plant. So the idea that the capacity auction has anything to do with stranded costs is a myth. The commission estimated what the competitive market price would be after 1102 based on a gas plant. And that's the whole idea of competition. Gas plants perhaps can provide power more efficiently than big old nuclear and coal plants.
Would you respond, please, to the respondents' statements that CenterPoint's position before the commission was different?
You know, this is a rulemaking. That's not a contested case. In these rulemakings, you have workshops, you have discussions. There's no ex parte prohibition. You simply come in and discuss the rule. Then you have a statutory right after the rule is promulgated to challenge the validity of the ruling. That's what both AEP and CenterPoint have done.
Let me just make sure again, going back to the capacity auction, the e-com model, it's company specific, isn't it? I mean, he mentioned something about your debt service was in there.
No, the debt service isn't in there.
He said it. Your cost of average cost of capital.
He said a lot of things I don't agree with. The only thing I agree with is his statement that the only way the utility can be made whole is to take into account the time value of money.
Let me explain to me what goes into the e-com model and how that translates into the capacity auction. I mean, what is taken into account?
One of the factors in the e-com model is to determine a projected price of power.
But it's different
wholesale
for
price.
Each company, right?
No, I don't think so.
I thought
it could be, yes, in each rate case. But the standard is no different. You determine what the price of power is likely to be in a competitive environment. And that price is dictated, driven by a combined cycle gas plant.
So what is the company-specific data that goes into all this?
I don't know that there is company-specific data on that. It's an abstract insert into a computer model. And they projected that at a level which turned out to be too high even for gas plants. But it's very difficult for me to sit here and hear these people argue that that was intended to recover the cost of a nuclear plant. It wasn't. That's what competition is about. Competition will produce prices lower than the utility will be able to recover in terms of the fixed cost, the unrecovered cost of nuclear power plants that the commission and everybody else said was the thing to build when they were built.
Is there anything in the proceedings to indicate that somehow the capacity auction true-up amounts were intended to mirror any sort of return on generation investment?
Absolutely not. And again, as I said at the outset, and I apologize if I'm speaking too emotionally about this, but this is an ad hoc appellate argument that was raised after the Court of Appeals decision.
What about his statement that, Mr. Day's statement, that you would get a return vastly in excess of what you would have earned in a regulatory environment?
That's simply wrong. And it's indicated by the point I'm trying to make about the gas price and the capacity auction true-up being based on an assumption that the competitive prices will be driven by gas plants. And that's the whole idea. Those competitive prices are going to be lower than the price that would have to be charged to recover the stranded costs in a nuclear plant. It's just as simple as that. So the capacity auction has nothing to do with stranded costs.
Any other questions?
Could I have a little extra time? I think Mr. Day had much more than 8 minutes.
I'd like to know about the 150-day...
I'm sorry?
I'd like to know about the 150-day lag. Do you agree that that's just generally regulatory authority to... I mean, that you're not entitled to... If we were just looking at the 150-day hearing period...
We're not a utility anymore. It says that. We're entitled to recover all of our net verifiable stranded costs.
And if...
The only way that can be done is to go back to when they were created, 1-102, and allow interest from that date.
But if we did not apply that line of authority that says that's just part of the regulatory lag and determine based upon the definition of stranded costs and the premise that you're required to recover carrying costs on that amount, that interest on just 150 days would be something that is intended to be recovered, wouldn't that be enough to make the statute, the rule itself, arbitrary? Did that make sense?
I think, let me mention this, and this is an important point. This rule is arbitrary. There's no doubt about it. But this is a competition rule that the legislature said the commission should announce in advance before the 2004 true-up. so that the commission in the true-up would be bound by the roof like a statute. And this court has said many times that when you've got a roof, the commission has to follow it. So what we're faced with now is the commission in the true-up having to follow a rule, no matter how you read it, that says no interest.
Well, and that, I guess that's my point. We don't have to decide that interest should start to run on stranded costs from the date of competition.
I would respectfully suggest, Your Honor, that you do. Because otherwise, it's going to go back to the commission. The commission, Lord knows what they'll decide, but they're open to decide that they don't have to allow interest back to 101.02. And the only way for this process to move forward, free of years of litigation, repeated arguments in the Court of Appeals, and in this case, appeals from the true-up proceeding, is to establish now what the ground rules are.
But it sounds like you do agree, Mr. Day, that on the state of the record and the commission's rule, they could decide that you could get interest on stranded costs.
I think it would be a violation of the rule for them to say that. Mr. Day's not speaking for the commission. I think this
Secondly, the commission has 150 days, and there's certain extensions they can give. But I suppose that waiting for a Supreme Court opinion is not one of the grounds that they could extend making their final decision on the true-up about, correct?
Your Honor,
their process is going to go on.
I have trouble with that. I think in the purpose of the appeal of a rule is to decide whether the rule constitutes a valid implementation of the statute. And I think that this court needs to decide that this rule is not only arbitrary, but that it fails to follow the statute, because it does not provide for interest from 1102.
Although there's nothing in the statute specifically that says that. You just say that's the spirit. Well, actually, I don't want to ask that question, because that's starting from...
I certainly could, Your Honor.
From your perspective, what's the timing of all this? I mean, if the commission does the true-up before this court issued an opinion, would that make this all moot, or should we expedite this?
I think it should be expedited, Your Honor, if that fits the court's resources and schedule. But it's not, these proceedings are going to drag on, unfortunately. The 150 days is directory. These true-up proceedings will last possibly for weeks or months. This is February. A decision by this court clarifying the law in this area, not simply sending it back because this rule didn't quite do it, but making it clear that interest is due from 1102 would simplify the whole process enormously.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the second clause. We'll take another brief recess. Thank you.